808, welcome back to CFRA Live. Many of you will know him as Canada's chief newsman, the now retired host of the national Peter Mansbridge, brought Canadians news from around the world in their own backyards for decades. He's now looking back at his own career in a new book called Off the Record, but don't call it a memoir. I spoke to Peter Mansbridge this week. Here's part of our conversation. Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Andy. Good to talk to you.
And thanks so much for joining us. Just wanted to throw it out there. Do you know how intimidating it is to interview you? Have you heard that? Have you heard that before?
I have, but I've never understood it. You know, I'm just a guy. You know, a guy started just like you. You know, doing my radio show, and then it became a TV show. But it's all the same.
And I guess just looking back at that, I do want to talk about the state of the media right now. But first, what made you want to write a book right now?
Well, a couple of publishers had come after me to do a memoir, but you're quite right. Don't call it a memoir. I was not big on that idea because I've always felt a memoir was sort of, you know, like the next step is death, right? Sort of as you're going out the door, you give them a manuscript and say, here it is, my memoir, goodbye, and you're gone. I'm still working. I'm still doing lots of things. You know, I don't do the National anymore, but I do a couple of documentaries here for the CBC. I do a podcast. I write books. I do this. I do that. So there's lots more experiences and anecdotes to come, hopefully. Anyway, I said, well, why don't I do a story or a book that's basically a collection of stories, the kind of stories behind the stories? And so that's what we ended up doing. And you've hopefully got one there in your hands.
Absolutely. And looking back, looking at this book as well, just perhaps explaining to listeners, how did you first get into this crazy news landscape as a career? What made you want to do this?
Well, it was a fluke, really. I had no... to tell you the truth, I had once, as a kid, going to Glebe Collegiate in Ottawa, I thought, you know, maybe I want to be a sportscaster. So I wrote to the late, great Ernie Calcutt, who worked at CFRA, and said, hey, you know, I'm whatever I was at the time, 13, 14 years old, and I'd, you know, someday like to be a sportscaster, and, you know, can you give me any tips? And I never heard back from him for about a month. And then I got a wonderful letter from Ernie Calcutt telling me all the things that I should consider. But by then, I kind of moved on in my dreams, and I wanted to be a pilot. And the next thing you knew, I dropped out of school. I joined the Navy for a little bit. Then I ended up in Churchill, Manitoba, working for an airline. Called a flight one day. There was a guy in the terminal who liked my voice. Said you should be in radio, and I started working the next night at the little radio station, which was a CBC station in Churchill.
And that's the rest is history, I guess they say.
Yeah.
And, you know, given, I know for me, growing up in a small rural Ontario town, it's allowed me to have more empathies for the stories that I tell and that we've told. Do you feel like those kind of humble beginnings have helped you in your career?
Absolutely, and I think it's great. You know, when young journalists come to me and say, you know, well, what should I do? How should I start off? I said, get out of the big city. Go somewhere small. The stories are in many ways the same. People care about where their kids go to school, what their streets are like, you know, how city council works. All of those things are a precursor to what you may end up covering someday on Parliament Hill or Queen's Park, you name it. But you also get to do everything in the station, right? Often in the smaller stations, people are trained to do everything from, you know, behind the microphone to behind the camera to in front of the camera, you know, all of those things. And, you know, it's a great experience, and you learn to appreciate what others do.
And, you know, the goal, obviously, for many journalists is to move on to the big time. And 30 years at CBC for you during a very difficult time in our history, very interesting time in human history. Do you ever look back and try to reflect and just wrap your head around just how much news has changed in the past four decades and also the world in general?
Yeah, I do. And writing this book was a good experience for me because I realized that, you know, not only had so many things happen in the kind of 50 years that I was in at the CBC and working for the National, but I'd been at so many of these moments in our history, from the, you know, fall of the Berlin Wall to all the various elections and conventions and things that I'd covered for the CBC, all the interviews I'd done, how I'd traveled the country and the world, and how lucky I'd been. When I started, and you talk about how the business has changed, when I started, film was black and white, you know, and you physically cut it and stuck it together. That's how you put together an item. And today's world, obviously, is so much different. The technology is unbelievable. What you can do and do very quickly. Now, that puts, you know, heavy pressures on journalists who have to, you know, make decisions in terms of their stories and what they're writing and saying in a heartbeat, where we used to have time to kind of think about what we were saying, make extra phone calls, do extra, you know, basic journalism to get our stories in such a fashion that we were proud of them and confident in them. Today's journalists do that same thing, but they do it in far less time than we ever did.
And just, I think we both know that social media has played a large role in that, particularly over the last 10 years as it's continued to kind of develop. So we've seen the news landscape kind of a fickle, divisive, sometimes angry place when we see stories on social media and things like that. What do you think the biggest threat to the news industry is right now, given the, you've talked about the fastness that reporters need to work on deadlines. There's also less resources in the industry. I guess, what do you see as the biggest threat to news right now?
It's all about trust, you know, and you know, whether they're listeners or viewers or readers, they've got to trust you. And more and more they're asking, why should I believe you? And we have to be able to answer that question. We have to be able to be a lot more transparent in the way we operate, the way things we say and the things we do. And, you know, when we leave the question open as to whether or not they're getting the real deal, we're jeopardizing our future. So to me, the biggest issue confronting journalism today, and there are a number of them, but the biggest one for me is the whole issue of trust.
And just on that that thought of trust, where do you think it kind of took a hit along the way? It seems like, you know, newsmen like yourself and of the past have been the go-to for that trustworthiness. So where do you think we lost it along the way?
Well, I think the explosion in news sources has been a challenge for all of us. You know, when you go, especially over kind of the last 20 years and see the emergence first of the 500-channel universe and then the 1,000-channel universe and, all the satellite television news channels, the live streaming, the internet, the social media, all these things have put pressure on basically on the content being whether or not it's truthful and accurate. And when people are asking questions about why we should believe you, they're striking at the heart of why we exist. If we don't have that, we don't have the fundamental reasons why people trust us to be a pillar of democracy. If we don't have that, it's time to close up shop. But we haven't reached that point. And, you know, news organizations are starting to realize what they have to do to get back on track with the people they serve. But there's also a responsibility on the people's part as well. They've got to take a much harder look at what they see as trusted news sources. Social media is great for a lot of things, but it's also, there's a lot of garbage on social media, and that's hurting us all in the long run.
I think an understatement for sure, but just in terms of getting the media to kind of reflect on that, do you find there is somewhat a defensiveness on that side to, you know, critically look at what they're doing and explain it to the public? Almost like, you know, I know what I'm doing, I don't need to explain it to you.
The media is not a monolith. We all operate kind of differently, and there are different policies, different guidelines that exist in different organizations. But I think you see some of the leading news organizations in the world recognizing that they've got to be more transparent in explaining how they operate. You know, what is news? How do you decide on what's the most important story? How do you decide whether or not to give anonymity to some sources, not to others? These kind of things are the areas in which people are questioning us and are wondering why we do certain things. And we've got to have answers for that. And we have to explain how hard we work on some stories. They don't sort of drop out of the sky. Good news organizations will fund investigative journalism, and they'll spend weeks, months sometimes, on pursuing a story and not going to air with it until they're absolutely 100% confident that it's accurate.
You know, given just the totality of everything we've been talking about, when you see, you know, January 6th in the U.S. last year, you know, a group of people supporting the sitting president trying to actually overthrow the government, in their minds anyway, do you think that's a product of this divisiveness, the news cycle? I guess, what do you kind of chalk that up to in terms of just overall, how did we get here?
You know, it's a big question with, you know, more than a few answers to it. but, look, there are a lot of, there's a lot of blame to spread around on, you know, on the polarization that exists, not just in the States. It exists in our country, too. We saw it unfold during the election campaign, especially around the issue of vaccines. But listen, when there are people out there, whether it's in this country or elsewhere, who feel their story's not being told or they're not being represented in any fashion, in a meaningful and constructive way on the stories they see, whether it's TV or radio or print, if they don't see themselves, they start to wonder whether everything is stacked against them and whether the system is, you know, corrupt at its core. We started to see this emerge a lot when we realized that the rural-urban split on the way voters were exercising their mandate, both in the States and in Canada. And then in 2016, during the U.S. election that brought in Trump, it was very evident. And we all felt guilty about it afterwards. Oh, my God, we didn't cover, the Midwest. We only focused on what was happening on the coastal areas in our coverage of the U.S. election. And the same thing happens occasionally here, where it's all focused on, you know, big cities, especially, the downtown core in Toronto, which is always the criticism because the major media operations are based there. But, you know, the simple, if there is a simple answer to your question, it is that, you know, good journalism will reflect the country back to itself. And sometimes that reflection is one of very different opinions and divided opinions on the issues of the day. And you have to air them out. You can't sort of ignore one side when it's a constructive discussion and debate.
Yeah, it's definitely something to take forward. Just also wanted to ask you while I've got you just about the industry itself. Just I've always been a huge advocate for our public broadcaster and its journalism, but do you think it's accomplishing what it needs to currently as a public broadcaster?
Well, that's a really big question. I think it's always worthwhile for, look, the CBC is full of really talented people from coast to coast to coast. Mm-hmm. So I have no argument with, you know, the worker bees, if you will.
Of course.
My concern has always been at the more executive level of the corporation, and I think every once in a while it's important that they, as they're making these strategic decisions on the future of the place that affects all departments and the news and current affairs department a lot because it's the one that most Canadians say is the most important to them within a public broadcaster, that I think it's important that they reflect back on why the place was created in the initially. You know, it's a public broadcaster. It's on the one hand, it's not a state broadcaster. On the other hand, it's not a commercial broadcaster. We're not there to make money. And as the critics of the CBC know, we certainly don't make money, or the CBC certainly doesn't make money. But it's to use the funding that they get from the public purse in a way that reflects the country to itself. Excuse me. And arguably, it's not doing a great job on that right now.
And just, a couple big questions. I'll leave you with a couple softballs. Obviously, looking back at this book, you have a very long career. What are some of the interviews and stories that have stuck out to you most over the course of your career?
There have been 20,000 interviews that I've done. So
pick a favorite kid.
Yeah, it's a little hard to narrow them down. And there have been a cross-section, everything from, you know, Barack Obama to Margaret Thatcher, from Ringo Starr to Gord Downie. You know, I mean, they've all had their moments. Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, he's a brilliant artist, but he's crazy. And I, you know, spent a half hour with him, and it was one of the biggest challenges I've ever had in an interview. But listen, they've all been, you know, memorable. The ones that, oh, and I'm sure you find this the same, the ones that strike you the most are those where you actually feel that they're thinking about the interview, that they're thinking about the answers they're giving, that they're not sort of going to that message track in their head that they've played out 100 times before in other interviews. And so that's, you know, that's the role of the interviewer too, to break them out of a pattern and, you know, find the real person that's there in front of you. So all of them are different challenges. Many of the interviews I've done are with people that I couldn't tell you their names today because I've long since forgotten them, but I haven't forgotten the moment of the interview because they were the real deal. They were, they told the story exactly as the way it happened to them in whatever particular circumstance they'd been in.
Yeah, some story.
No spin, just the story.
It's former chief news anchor for the National, Peter Mansbridge. His new book, Off the Record, is available anywhere that you get your books. If you had a comment on anything you heard us chatting about, anything over the show today, you can text us at 580-580, tweet us at CFRA Ottawa.